Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Helping you discover the Twin Cities, it is Radio K's Real College Podcast, online and on the air. My name is Matthew Curtis, and this week we are discussing the ins and outs of medical marijuana. Pretty edgy, I know. As of right now, about half of the 50 states have legalized marijuana for medical use in one way or another, all with entirely different legislation, restriction, factors, and histories. But to make things slightly less complicated, we'll just be talking about Minnesota today. May 29th, 2014 was the day Governor Dayton legalized medical marijuana after a long-fought battle, but as we take a closer look at medical marijuana in Minnesota, we realize that we still have a long way to go. Also, we hear the word on the street from volunteer Emily Duca and Radio K's weekly release spotlight with Zach Simon. And it all starts right now on the Real College Podcast. You've been feeling sort of low. You're listening to the Real College Podcast. Live in the studio, I have with me Aaron Bolton, producer for the show. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you, man?
I'm not too bad. Not too bad at all. And tonight, we are talking about marijuana, cannabis, weed, all kinds of things like that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been a little over a month now since Minnesota rolled out their medical marijuana program. It's an exciting step for some, but it's leaving out a lot of other people. We definitely have a conservative program. As of yet.
I think that's a very surprising for the state. I mean, I feel like we're a very liberal state in terms of a lot of social and civil issues, but marijuana seems to be lagging behind.
We're definitely progressive in some sense, but I think when it comes to any kind of substance, alcohol, or even marijuana in the medical form, I don't think we're quite as liberal as other states, definitely around the country. But the good end of things is we implemented our medical marijuana program on time, what the Department of Health said. So when it was passed last year, it was basically just shy of a year, and they had medical marijuana on the shelves and ready to go for the few patients that were registered on July 1st, like they said. And I know, I think it was Delaware. They passed a medical marijuana law in 2009, and their first dispensary opened up just a few days before July 1st. So it took that long to implement. And so a lot of other states do drag their heels when it does come to this. So we were very forward thinking and about getting it ready to go for patients.
Yeah, I understand, Aaron, that painkillers and such as opiates don't have the same effects as marijuana. And in fact, for some conditions, marijuana is the only kind of relief from that.
Yeah, for some conditions it is. Some conditions it works slightly better. Some conditions it works just the same as these other drugs, but has minimal side effects. So that's the other attraction to medical marijuana for some of these patients, is the lack of side effects that they have to go through. I know I listened to an NPR story, and there was one woman that her doctor prescribed a pharmaceutical, and she had hallucinations for about 3 days, and she just had to deal with these crazy side effects to just treat her condition. When medical marijuana has limited side effects and can treat the condition the same and or better.
In my story, which was produced about a year ago, it kind of explores how things were evolving in Colorado when it was...
For medical program or...
For the medical program. Okay. Oh, no, for the legalization
in
general.
For the legalization.
Yeah, I was talking to a woman in Colorado who ran a dispensary for recreational or whatever use, and kind of comparing it to where Minnesota was at the time, and it seemed very conservative. It seemed, that it wasn't going to happen for a long time. And even now, although we do have it is taking a long time to get going.
Yeah, to get moving. And I think that's also something to be said for, how a lot of people are pushing for Sunday liquor sales and kind of the half steps we're taking towards that. Like now we have, Sunday growler sales. You can get a growler from a brewery, but and you could literally go buy as many of those as you want. So the access to beer is almost all the same. But I guess it's just these half steps we seem to take when it comes to this area in politics. And I know, government is slow moving, which is very, very true. So it's going to be interesting to see what the next steps are or what the future of this program is, because Colorado has taken off. Colorado you know, is a whole nother beast. And but everyone's views from Colorado is a lot different.
We'll do the show in a kind of chronological order, where we'll start with my story that was produced a year ago and then move on to Aaron's, which was done today. And we'll compare how things have changed in Minnesota resulting in this legalization of medical marijuana.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to summarize for you the meeting that I have just had with bipartisan leaders. America's public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse.
40 years after the war on drugs was declared, the United States is a very different place. Following many arrests and crackdowns, the late 90s saw a change in government mentality that would lead us eventually to 2014, where 20 states have legalized medicinal marijuana, and Colorado and Washington have become the first states to allow recreational use. Since the Obama administration came into office in 2009, the intensity of marijuana persecution has dramatically decreased. Could this be the beginning of a new age of laissez-faire and legality for cannabis in the US? When the results came in on the 6th of November 2012, the world wondered how the recently re-elected president would react to Washington and Colorado's flagrant disregard for national and international drug laws.
It does not make sense from a prioritization point of view for us to focus on recreational drug users in a state that has already said that under state law that's legal.
And that was it. The federal government stood idly by, frying bigger fish, as the doors of Colorado dispensaries opened their doors to every man and woman that was 21 or older on January 1st of 2014, setting record numbers. The Breckenridge Cannabis Club was one of those dispensaries.
I do think that Colorado and Washington are just the start.
Caitlin McGuire, the owner of the four-year-old establishment, told me why Colorado was so keen on making weed available for all.
Pushing it under the carpet is not the way to regulate this product. I think having it in a clean, safe environment that's regulated and taxed will prove to be better.
And apparently, it's not just the Harold and Kumars of the state enjoying the newly declared freedom.
We've only been open for now 13 days. We've seen a lot of stereotypes being broken every day. And they're not just your typical stoner, irresponsible dude. There's really all sorts of different types of people that consume cannabis and I think will continue to do so.
With not just the stoner culture advocating legalization, the louder voice asked and received, but with the increased availability and the lack of legal stigma, how would society be affected?
I was gonna clean my room until I got high. There is the possibility that we'll see people who have never smoked marijuana in their life, who now, because it's legal, are going to try it. As far as a recreational drug is concerned, then the only option we have right now, which is alcohol. And if a few more people decide to stop drinking alcohol and start drinking marijuana, I don't think that's necessarily the worst thing for our society.
It is likely that the bill would have had trouble passing had it not been for the colossal benefit for the government. Colorado State is taxing weed 25%, with the first $40 million earned going towards the building of schools. And if the residents of a town don't like it, they don't have to have it. The nation's eyes are on Colorado. If this is how marijuana can be regulated successfully, the national industry could very well follow suit within the coming decades. But some states seem to be very far from being ready. 1,000 miles away in the Land of Lakes, many people have been working for over a decade to legalize medicinal marijuana in Minnesota. I spoke to Heather Azee, political director for Minnesotans for Compassionate Care, a coalition of advocates for marijuana, to find out why Minnesota was trailing so far behind in the legalization of marijuana, if Colorado was just the beginning of a nationwide change, as Caitlin predicted.
We don't have the ability to force law in Minnesota like many of the other states do, where they have that ballot initiative power that allows citizens to collect signatures and to send something to the ballot and then to vote on it.
Here, the issue isn't consuming for mere enjoyment. The stakes are far higher.
Yeah, the real focus of this issue is on the patients, the people who are forced to make terrible decisions right now between staying in Minnesota with their families and their communities and their homes and their jobs, or picking up and leaving because they have epileptic conditions and seizures are not controlled by traditional medications.
Despite the health benefits and the 3/4 of Minnesotans in favor of medicinal marijuana found in a recent poll, the Minnesotan legislature still won't budge.
you know, there really isn't anybody who has a problem with this outside of the law enforcement community. You know, they're being asked to support marijuana, which is kind of a silly thing when you think about it. It's much like asking firefighters to support fireworks. You know, but we shouldn't be looking to law enforcement for medical advice.
It isn't currently known whether this bill will pass or not. It actually depends on how Governor Dayton reacts. But Heather has a pretty good feeling about it, and is hoping that people suffering will soon be helped by marijuana without having to leave their lives behind.
Many of our patients who have taken family members through this process, who have, you know, subsequently passed, unfortunately, saw this work firsthand and claim that marijuana kept their loved one alive and in a good frame of mind for many additional months beyond what they were hoping for. You know, if your daughter is passing from cancer, I know many of these families would do just about anything to make them comfortable, to see them smile again just for a few months and let them spend a little bit of time with their young children before they pass.
This is Emily Duker on Real College Podcast, bringing you this week's Word on the Street, where we highlight a few musical offerings going on in the upcoming week. First off, tonight, August 9th, around 9 o'clock, you can head to the Turf Club's Clown Lounge for the fourth installment of Baumhaus, a night of improvised and minimal techno curated by Tiny Desk with the guest producer of Grant Cutler, and this week featuring Zach Coulter, Holly Hansen, and Garrett Neal. And now, to give you an idea of what to expect at tonight's event, here is Ocean by Tiny Desk. This Wednesday, we've got What Tyrants and Stereo Confession at the 7th Street Entry, along with Madison's Modern Mod and one of our favorite local bands, Fury Things. This event is 3/4 Minneapolis, 1/4 Madison, so it's going to be a good time. This track from the debut album of What Tyrants is called Muffins. Another event featuring local music will be happening this Friday, August 14th, at Ice House Minneapolis, where Bad Bad Hats will be celebrating the recent release of their first LP, Psychic Reader, along with fellow local talent, The Awful Truth. Here's a little taste of Bad Bad Hats and their track titled Midway off their new album.
Sitting in the backseat on a side. Me spitting at tonight. I wish that you would ask me if I'm feeling alright. The shadows you were casting nearly swallowed the night. God, I could have kissed you.
Our last highlight for this week is Moon Honey, a peculiar band from Louisiana who will be performing this Sunday, August 16th at the 7th Street Entry along with opener Panther Ray. Let's see what you think of their latest single, Boy Magic.
Hello, you'll listen to the Real College Podcast. My name is Matthew Curtis, and I'm joined by Aaron Bolton, producer of the show, to talk about medical marijuana. And what brought you to this story in the first place?
I found it interesting it was exciting that we're having a medical marijuana program in our state, first of all. But it was also very interesting because I was just interested in it, and I just took a peek at it, and then I was like, oh my God, like I just realized how conservative it is. And I was wondering why that is, and I know that was law enforcement. Governor Dayton looked to law enforcement groups, and they were pushing. The Marijuana Policy Project, which is a national organization, had a big hand in getting the law passed in Minnesota. But they law enforcement groups kind of backed them into a corner a little bit, and so they kind of had to compromise. But it doesn't mean that it's not a good step. It doesn't mean that people are not optimistic. They're very excited. And as of January 1st, the Department of Health is going to decide whether or not to add intractable pain, which is a condition where medical marijuana is actually basically one of the only things that can help them. Opiates can have limited effect. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But medical marijuana is one of the big keys to solving that condition. So the program is being looked at and it's evolving. It's just kind of a mystery. Some patients are nervous about the future of the program, because there's a very small number of patients. And, as of right now, there's about 528 patients that have been certified, but only 278 of them. And that's like as of today. And 278 of them have been further approved to actually pick up marijuana. So only 278 people in the entire state can actually go to a dispensary and get a prescription.
So basically, there's a long way to go.
There is a long way to go. It's going to be kind of an evolving thing. And I think a lot of people are going to be paying attention to it as we continue to move forward. And there's a lot of different parts to it, as you said.
Well, I'm glad the organization itself was well organized, but what about the rest of it? I feel like the projections don't match the actual...
Yeah, well, the big problem everyone's seeing in Minnesota Medical Solutions just recently raised prices. And insurance does not cover medical marijuana anywhere because it's still a federally scheduled drug that's legal. So no insurance will cover it. And then the unfortunate thing is there's only 9 ailments that you can qualify under for the program in Minnesota. And there's only 2 licenses, a manufacturing license that were awarded to Leafline Labs and Minnesota Medical Solutions. And there's only 8 dispensaries around the state. So not only is distance an issue, I did talk to one patient who'd have to drive 2.5 hours from Marshall, Minnesota to St. Cloud just to see the dispensary. But he's also getting what they call the doc block. The doc block is places that treat chronic illnesses are taking different stances. So I know Gillette Hospital, which you'll hear in the story, Patrick McClellan, he goes to Gillette, and they're very accepting of letting their doctors decide whether or not to register patients. But I know other places that do treat medical chronic illnesses are not, some will not say what their policy is, and some are just saying, no, we're not allowing our doctors to register. So the numbers are low, and that's causing problems for the manufacturers.
This sounds like a very complicated issue. There's so many moving parts in terms of the doctors and the location and the conditions. It's crazy.
Yeah, there's been a lot of moving parts, and it's one little thing will snowball into another. And the patients are nervous right now because there was a patient that I talked to, Janessa, and she's not in the story, but she, because of these price hikes, because of how everything snowballed, the low registration numbers that are causing the manufacturing process to be more costly and not cost effective, she can't afford her medication. And a lot of these people used to treat with marijuana off the street. Now, some of them are buying what they can and then supplementing the rest with marijuana off the street, which Minnesota's taken a very patient-focused design to the program. So some patients need high CBD and they need low THC, which CBD is the compound that's, it doesn't get you high. It's a numbing compound. So it's good for seizure patients, also good for muscle spasms. But some people need a delicate balance between THC and CBD. So
THC is the stuff that gets you high, and
yes,
CBD is the numbing effect.
Yep. And so some patients need CBD, but they can get that with marijuana off the street, but they don't know. They have no idea what they're getting. And so, like I said, the patient I talked to, her name is Janessa, and she's actually just dealing with the pain from her condition. She has a condition that gives her severe muscle spasms, but also gives her severe joint pain. And so she literally just has to deal with the pain now because she can't afford her medicine. And, you know, and compared to some of these pharmaceuticals that they were on, that like Patrick McClellan, he could die from some of these pharmaceuticals that he has to take in a certain way.
And it's a dividing issue, and I think it's divided out of state, and I guess we'll see how these half steps or full steps will evolve in the future. Thank you so much, Aaron, for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
We go now to Aaron Bolton's story on medical marijuana. Hope you enjoy.
Minutes before midnight struck, bringing in the month of July, 48-year-old Patrick McClellan stood waiting outside Minnesota Medical Solutions in Minneapolis. He was said to be one of the three very first patients to enter one of eight medical marijuana dispensaries spread throughout Minnesota.
It's surreal. And I'm trying to hold back the emotion until this is over, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. You know, I'm trying to prevent the tears from flowing because I know they will. So.
McClellan qualifies for the program under a rare form of muscular dystrophy,
called mitochondrial myopathy, which consists of severe and violent muscle spasms.
And despite the 30 pills McClellan takes on a daily basis, he still suffers from violent muscle spasms that can leave him helpless.
When I have an attack, what I'm supposed to do is to chew up these two medications,
which the FDA says could kill him when he takes these medications this way. And McClellan says they take about 10 minutes to work. But when he uses marijuana to treat an attack, which he's been doing for years now, it's a different story.
So when I have an attack, one small puff off a vaporizer will stop muscle spasms almost immediately.
McClellan has been fighting for legal access to medical-grade marijuana since 2012. And now that his relief is here, that's not the case for everyone. Minnesota's medical marijuana program is one of the more conservative programs in the country.
The language of the law, what passed and was enacted, is a lot more restrictive than what we would like to see in Minnesota. My name is Robert Kopecky. I'm the Deputy Director of State Policies at the Marijuana Policy Project.
The Marijuana Policy Project is a national organization that fights for reform on marijuana laws at the state and federal level. Kopecky says there's a lot more work to be done here in Minnesota. To give a basic rundown of where the law stands now, patients can only qualify under 9 chronic illnesses, which include cancer, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, Tourette syndrome, ALS, seizures, severe muscle spasms, Crohn's disease, and terminal illness with life expectancy under 1 year. And unlike many medical states, Minnesota only allows oils, pills, and tinctures as delivery methods for patients. And these meds can only be bought from two manufacturers, Minnesota Medical Solutions and Leaf Line Labs. Being there only 8 locations, distance is an issue. 31-year-old Andrew Stoll of Marshall, Minnesota, would have to make a 2.5-hour drive to St. Cloud to access the nearest dispensary. But like many people who qualify, Stoll isn't just facing the distance issue.
Unfortunately, none of the doctors I've found, Aaron, are really wanting to prescribe it. So many doctors right now are afraid of the professional repercussions of the prescription.
Doctors do not prescribe marijuana themselves. They just register patients who can then go access a doctor and pharmacist at a dispensary, which creates a legal buffer. Kopecky says doctors' reluctance to participate in new medical marijuana states is relatively normal.
The medical communities are trained under, a specific, scholastic regimen that we will be put into. The medical school model is very particular and, very, I guess, FDA medication-approved focus. So there is some reluctance that we see in doctors and in medical marijuana states.
Nonetheless, Minnesota's rollout is moving slowly. Out of 334 doctors registered, only 475 patients have been registered throughout the state. About half of those patients still are awaiting further approval to actually pick up a prescription. For people like Stoll, who are still struggling to get started, hope is not all lost.
I'm not pessimistic about this. I'm very hopeful about things that are happening. The wheels of government are very slow turning.
The program's unexpected struggle to firmly establish itself has manufacturer Minnesota Medical Solutions raising prices on their prescriptions. McClellan, who we heard from at the beginning of the story, may not be able to afford his newfound legal access.
It went from $47 for the preloaded vaporizer cartridge to now $66. That same cartridge.
That $19 increase has put McClellan in a tough spot.
I estimate using 3 pens a month. But at the current price now, I can't afford that. I would be only able to get 2 pens. And I think what the problem is going to be is if, even at this price or if the price gets raised, it will not be affordable for almost anybody.
Minnesota Medical Solutions CEO Kyle Kingsley told the Associated Press more patients used a low-income discount than expected, forcing the company to spread out costs. And enrollment numbers in the program make it hard to save on mass production cost.
But the main issue is that now I think what's going to end up happening is you're going to have people that cannot afford the medications that are now already certified. So you will have people that will buy minimum amounts or whatever they can afford and then have to supplement with cannabis off the street.
I reached out to Leafline Labs to see if they were also raising prices, and CEO Manny Munson-Regala said they have no plans on raising prices in the near future. But when insurance does not cover medical marijuana, and for McClellan and other Minnesota Medical Solution patients, the price increase hits hard. As for now, patients must bide their time and hope for relief. For the Real College Podcast, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Hello, you're listening to the Real College Podcast with me, Matthew Curtis, and I am joined by Radio K's copywriter, Zach Simon. How you doing, buddy?
Pretty well. How's it going?
Not too bad. And we're talking about the Weekly Spotlight, the album that we highlight every week in association with the Electric Fetus. What is it this week, Zach?
This week is Part Time's album, Virgo Maze. It's actually a really fun double album released by the Austin aficionado, David Speck. So.
And what's his story?
Well, he's originally from California, but he was a really big staple of the kind of garage rock scene in Austin, Texas. But he started kind of making this really cool side project called Part Time, which was a lot more psychedelic and lo-fi, like just the lowest fi you can possibly fi. And he just kind of got into it, and now it's basically his main project. So really, really cool stuff from him, though.
And does it have any elements of garage rock? Is that style carried on within his work, or is it completely new?
It's like psych rock, so it has kind of just a lot of classic rock elements from it, just generally from being psych rock, but by and large, it's a very, like, the whole project is a very, like, do-it-yourself, like, mix of different elements. Like, he bought this, this, like, really old synth Casio, like Casio synth rather. And he just kind of like runs a couple instruments through it. And he just, I think it's mostly whatever influences he takes from his other projects is mostly just his like wealth of experience. He's a very experienced musician. He knows what he's doing, and it's really easy to tell.
How long has he been in the game? I mean, do you know how many albums he's released and that kind of thing?
Well, for Part Time, this is actually his third album in just 5 years, which is really, really impressive, I think. But he, I mean, worked with two other bands. I'm actually blanking on them. I didn't really include them in the review. So he's released three albums, and he's just been, I think he's been working since about early 2000s, probably around 2005.
Oh, so this guy is really experienced.
Yeah, no, he knows his stuff.
And do you think his style has changed over the last three albums, or do you think it's pretty much remained the same?
Yeah, actually, no. I really enjoyed this album. The first two, his most recent one before this one in 2011 is called PDA, and it was very like classic his style, and is the same as his first album, but they're both sort of similar sounding, and that was always kind of a bummer, I guess. After like the first one was released, I believe, in 2009, second one in 2011. Not a lot of change in sound. Still really good quality music, but this one feels a lot more polished, and it's still very lo-fi, but it kind of almost, it's like, it's weird, because it feels almost polished for like a lo-fi sound. Like it's almost an oxymoron, but I think it has a lot of really cool elements that he used to have this sort of almost like Morrissey element to his voice, and now that's kind of gone, and it's a lot more rhythmic. That's kind of what's replaced it, is a lot more rhythmic, even a little bit more poppy, a lot more upbeat. So,
and if you could choose like one song to kind of captivate this style and this change over the albums, which one would you choose?
So there's one song called Science, Shadows, and Religions on the Wall, which is, I think, one of my favorite songs, but I know that the one that everybody around here really likes is called Honey Lips. It's just a very like light, very almost like a love song, actually, which is kind of surprising because the rest of the album doesn't really feel that way, and it's a lot more danceable than a lot of the other tracks, so it's really cool.
Right, and to play us out, here is Honey Lips by Part Time from their record Virgo's Maze and our weekly release spotlight. Thanks to Aaron Bolton, Max Fuller, Emily Duca, and Zach Simon for contributing to this week's Real College Podcast. You can find us on RadioK.org, PRX, and iTunes, and on air Sundays at 6 p.m. on Radio K. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund, and thank you for listening.
Dancing with me face to face. Hold me in your arms.